voters want to vote via the mail, they should be able to do so. There are a lot of, there are states that do that. There's good evidence that it increased turnout.
This is Darian Sahanaja of the Brian Wilson Band, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC Accra.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Milad H. Mazari of Murray, Utah. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Help WGXC vibrate on and keep essential radio on your 90.7 FM frequency.
90.7 FM.
Accra, Hudson, Catskill.
FM frequency. 90.7 FM.
Accra, Hudson, Catskill.
Hello and welcome to the Thingularity Radio Program, broadcasting live from Unimatrix Zero of the Catskill Maker Syndicate, located at 55 West Flint Street in the heart of Catskill, also known as that weird place right next to the Juice Brand. We're here to answer any science or technology-related questions you may have. Contact us at catskillmakersinfo@gmail.com or directly at www.singularity.tech. And now, tonight's members and guests. How is everybody doing tonight?
Doing well.
Yeah. Ahoy.
Yo.
Ahoy, hoy.
Yo, yo, yo.
I don't know how, but I'm doing it.
All right.
That's the best answer you could give.
And we also have Brian, ex-cat wrangler.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, we have a decent crew tonight. Several members.
Absolutely bursting at the seams.
And, gotta fix that.
If things sound a little different, we're coming to you via a different method this evening. We're using a program and service called Jitsi because Zoom sucks for so many reasons.
Please give us feedback on how it sounds.
Yes.
Yeah, if we sound better or worse, we would like to know. But so far, so good. And at least this way, Jitsi's a video chatting program so that the audio blends together, of course, but now we can at least see each other, and hopefully that keeps us from having as much dead air or any other problems like last time. Ben, how you doing?
Pretty good, yourself?
Doing okay. Got anything new to talk about?
No, not really.
Not a thought of nothing in the last 30 seconds?
He's just here to chill.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess.
Right. He's vertical today, so it's a vertical kind of day.
That's Jill speaking up. How you doing, Jill?
Doing all right. Doing projects or not.
Well, it's okay. good.
Is your sewing project going good?
Sure.
Oh, okay. That was Cody.
Nobody wants to talk about their projects? What the hell?
I don't mind talking about my projects. Well, I quit. I didn't mean to step on.
I know. I'm just trying to get everybody introduced. Cody, what you got?
Well, after the previous show, I found myself with a lot of free time on my hands. And much to your consternation, I switched over our server to Arch Linux. So that
okay,
was
I'm cutting you off now. Brian, how you doing?
All you had to do is say Arch.
I hate Arch. I mean, Arch.
It's Linux. It's just Linux. It's all equally great.
No, it's all equally crap. Every operating system is garbage. Humans are terrible.
Oh, wow.
Tom, how you doing tonight?
wait a second. I'm going to put on my Jeffrey Toobin suit now.
Jeffrey Toobin suit.
Jeffrey Toobin? Yep. You couldn't do that before the show?
Well, Tom is with us tonight, and as soon as he's got his suit on, he shall return, apparently.
It's not like anybody can see us. On or off. Except us.
I still don't want a Jeffrey Toobin.
Okay.
Brian, did I talk to you yet?
No.
Yeah, you talked to me, but I really didn't do anything. I'm doing good. I'm actually working on two different Arduino projects simultaneously, and also a big computer thing, but the two of those three things involve cameras. One a big black and white camera, and the other one a virtual camera for Video Game World's production crap.
Are you already hacking on that?
Yes.
Are you using like a video loopback?
For which one, the video camera or the virtual camera?
The virtual.
So the virtual camera is based on this open source thing that someone in town, Sam Margolius, wants to do. And it's just uses a common off-the-shelf components to do to have a handheld virtual cam in a, you know, in a virtual world. So you have a camera operator actually aiming at stuff and seeing what's on the screen while it's being generated live. So it's one component of what could be a mini component production system. But I'm just doing the Arduino control interface part, the little hacky stuff, so you can get your hands in and do tactile controls on this device.
It's actually pretty.
What's that?
Can you get your fingers stuck? You said get your hands inside the device.
No, hands on the device. So it'll have tactile controls like a real camera would, but you're aiming it in a virtual world using, I guess there's some kind of gyros on it too. That's the one proprietary generic thing.
Gyros or accelerometers like you have in a phone?
I think it's actually a full system from some VR kit that's being scabbed onto it. So that's the one component that's actually costs a little bit more. Everything else is just spare parts.
Nice.
Yeah, but...
So, virtual camera. I like the idea.
And a real camera, a black and white one. With a weird aspect ratio, because sensors are weird today.
Why? Now, is this the one that you're making that sub-mini ITX full computer for?
Yeah. It's a full-blown computer, but in a little 4 or 5-inch... motherboard form factor, and
that's so awesome.
Scabbing it onto a sensor that'll fit old mechanical lenses, older lenses from the 60s, in a small half-inch format. I want to do a bigger format, but the bigger sensors cost like $4,000. $3,000 to $4,000 for like a.
What do you know if you sell your massive collection of mechanical lenses?
Yeah, I could just trade for a sensor, exactly.
But who wants to give up your mechanical lenses?
Yeah, I know, right?
They're too cool.
Yeah. They look, they have beautiful flaws in them.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I got a chance. Corey, how you doing?
Okay.
Yeah, he you can talk right here.
Yep.
Just wanted to make sure everybody knew who you were when you do talk. Got any new interesting projects or anything you're working on?
Nope.
Yeah, that's because the Forgotten Geek has his own show and his own work to do.
Oh yeah, he does have the Forgotten Geek every second Tuesday.
Tuesdays 11 a.m.
Nice.
Yeah, he's the Forgotten Geek.
All right. Anybody else? Anything they would like to venture forward? You've been working on.
I know that I've been trying to do projects, but you know, we do have stories for sure to bring to the table, if you're ready. But
sure, pick one, fire it up.
Okay,
already in the pocket until later on in the show, and then I'll just unleash him.
Well, what about Tuesday? Voters chose by an overwhelming majority to extend the state's automotive right to repair law to cover
states.
Something that somebody voted on that isn't utterly depressing one way or another.
Yes, it's something awesome. Because I don't know if anybody's seen the commercials. Anybody seen the commercials against the Right to Repair Acts? But they were horrifyingly dumb.
Egregious.
Okay, you've seen them. So,
oh, yeah.
If you go to unlock your car, somebody will come to assault you. Yeah.
You will be assaulted by strangers because we have opened up the software to allow other people to repair it. So they have taken control of our software and they will assault you because of it.
And one of them had
So if you have the right to repair a car, if they allow that, then you're going to get fondled in a parking lot? Is that their...
That was exactly their commercial.
That and somebody might make their way into your garage.
Which,
or something like that.
By the way, was possible way before the idea of open sourcing car repair
was possible.
You just had to capture the signal and replay it.
Like, if
your garage door doesn't know the difference.
I thought that was just a $5 wrench and I'm in.
That is most box. But at least like this is people like maybe hacking in and getting your personal information out of the machine. But in all of our experiences, has opening up software ever made it less secure? Anyone?
I'm just saying that, like, if somebody wants to do something to you, they will, and they'll likely not like hack into your stuff.
Let's put it like this. If you open up your software, people will be able to find the vulnerabilities more easily. As a corollary, it's easier to fix problems that you know about. Now, with a closed proprietary piece of software, if there's vulnerabilities, only the person who wrote the software will know about them, maybe. You will have absolutely no chance of fixing it, or somebody who you trust fixing it.
Downside of that scenario is exactly what occurred with the Snowden case, because the NSA started building up a big toolbox of what's called zero-day exploits, which are all the problems in code that hackers find that nobody knows about yet. They compiled all of those vulnerabilities into a big central location, and then hackers broke into the NSA's servers and stole those tools. They've been using those tools to commit all the ransomware attacks. So every time you see a city get shut down because of ransomware, that's because the NSA had a tool they held on to, they told nobody about, and then it was stolen from them.
So easy peasy. But you know, the fact that in this regards to farmers too. Like, people who own John Deere tractors, they're now proprietary. And so now farmers have to figure out how to hack into their own tractors and other farming equipment just so they can fix them, just so they don't have to take them to the John Deere dealership, pay extra money. You know, especially farmers. Like, we used to just take care of our own
food.
We took care of our own stuff.
A farmer should be able to fix their own equipment. If they have the tools to physically go out into the field and fix it, they should not be stopped from doing so simply because of software and licensing. That's evil. They're not trying to help their customer. They're trying to suck money out of their customer's wallet. Another company that does that? Well, there's a bunch of companies that do that. I'm not even going to get into it.
And then use the worst tactics possible to scare people into voting a different way.
Getting Vaughn in your garage.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. It's a form of just absolutely malicious rent seeking. You know, it's not saying that there's anything wrong with service agreements, but being forced into a service agreement, that is wrong.
You're not forced into a service agreement because you don't have to buy the product at all.
No, but they could prosecute you for releasing tools to help people. Well, they used to be able to prosecute you for releasing tools to help people fix their own tractors. In the case of John Deere.
Well, they're doing it under the Digital Millennial Copyright Act?
Yeah, the DMCA.
So, like, I know, like, they would do that. Yeah, they would do that under for, like, printer cartridges. So, like, they're encrypted, and so then when you broke the encryption, you created a crime there.
Well, just like operating systems, like if a Tesla car is too old, it can no longer be serviced by the Tesla dealership. And then now what do you do?
Well, it's not that it can't be, but they aren't going to make any money on servicing it, so they won't.
They don't want to.
So then the Tesla gets discarded, and you go buy a new one, and the economy benefits.
If you can fix it on your own, sure.
No. You throw it away and buy a brand new one.
Well, no, I mean, people buy old Teslas that are no longer...
Yeah, that's bad for the economy. Throw them away, buy new ones.
Terrible.
Throw it all away, buy new ones. Never fix anything.
Yeah, the one dude who was fixing all those old Teslas, I think he gave up on that finally.
Yeah.
He did.
Now doing it in an internal combustion engine car, right?
He only did... I think he bought one, and then everybody backlashed against him just for buying one. And I haven't gotten too far into it, I guess. But I know that people got pretty mad at him for buying an internal combustion engine car. Oh, my kitty is begging.
Well, then he shouldn't have built it up like a religion around himself.
Oh, I don't know. I think maybe it was Vice who did that, not him.
You should be free to experiment.
Yeah, right? All he was trying to do was fix Teslas and say that Teslas can be fixed by other old Teslas.
Well, you know, good on the voters of Massachusetts.
Yeah. Bravo.
Okay. I think we've exhausted that topic.
I mean, not really. We can segue right into the other DMCA event that's happened over the last 2 weeks.
Wait, what?
Joe, would you like to take this since you brought it up? The takedown of quote-unquote pirated MP3s? The Recording Industry of America?
Oh, no. It wasn't even pirated MP3s. Okay, first of all, the DMCA goes after people that have to circumvent encryption. If you're downloading YouTube videos, you are not technically circumventing encryption because their quote-unquote encryption style is basically just bouncing you around to several different files across several different URLs. This is showing up legally to not be actual encryption. So far, it's a legal gray area for you to go and download videos from YouTube, but not like that's going to stop anybody. There are many downloaders available for YouTube. And before we even get into the software I'm talking about, there are many websites that you can go to, input the URL to the YouTube video, and extract your MP4 video. You can extract your MP3s. You want to fill out your MP3 collection with all the songs? Do it right from YouTube. Anywho, there's a program called YouTube-DL. Am I correct, Cody?
That's right. It's a Python script.
So it's only a Python script.
Yep.
I mean, I guess it would only have to be.
Of course, there are many other ways, too, but that is one way.
Well, this way is a program, a Python script, which I'm assuming doesn't even have that many lines to it, uploaded to GitHub that really ticked off YouTube because YouTube started sending DMCA takedown notices for the software, which the author of the software does have, they have at least a good argument that it is legal software to use. But since DMCA is, you know, the end all of power on the internet, a simple takedown notice makes GitHub legally required to take it down, whether or not, in fact, it is in violation of the DMCA or any copyrights.
So actually, the ones who sent the DMCA was the Recording Industry Association of America, and they didn't like it because, as a test case, the YouTube DL guide for testing it out, for, you know, if you want to just test it out on your own computer. They linked to, I don't know, some Justin Timberlake video and some other, you know, big name pop artists.
Taylor Swift, Icona yeah. Pop.
And they didn't like that. They didn't like people downloading those
no,
videos.
No, they didn't like people being told how to download those particular songs.
And as, right. You know, I mean, maybe just the industry should just change. Yeah, okay, every musician I know, okay, I can't speak for every musician ever, but every musician I know, they don't really make money from sales of their music. They make money from their live shows, from their merch and stuff like that.
Nobody cares about them, especially
this has been a problem for 20 years. They haven't changed yet.
This has been a problem for a long time, and similar to the movie industry. Like, the studios make most of the money. Like, everybody who you want to be paid has been paid already. Some people get residuals and stuff like that. Okay, cool, but. It maybe just the industry should change.
Well, if they were given enough money to actual, you know, performers and stuff, they wouldn't be having to do conventions and charging $100 for, you know,
right?
A photo.
Like, I mean, okay, so what like the music industry does is they front you like $500,000. It's an insane amount of money or more just to start an artist. And now that artist is in debt to the record label, $500,000 plus a certain percentage of what is made off of the record sales. So they are like basically indentured servants forever.
Sounds
owing.
Like a scam.
It is a huge scam.
Oh, yeah.
It's a huge scam. And that's why we go with what Bandcamp is probably the best out there on the internet that you could buy music from.
Yeah, I like them.
Wow.
A lot of the music I've found comes right from
Because
Bandcamp.
The artist gets more than 0.000002%.
The artist makes almost nothing. And I tell my artist friends, oh, well, I just bought your album from such and such. He says, don't even do that. Why did you do that? I'll just give you the album. I'll just give it to you. Because it's not worth anything. The record companies are getting all of the money. The movie distributors, they're getting all of the money. The artists that you want to support are not getting the money.
The change to the industry already came when the model was shifted to purchasing digital music. You have the iTunes store, you have Google Play.
Not really.
No, that's it. That is it. You get no change unless you vote in congressmen and people that will make laws to change this fundamentally. That's the model. If you're an artist, you will get screwed. And the money goes to the fat cats that run the organizations. And if you don't pirate music, you contribute to that system.
And that's why you use something like
wow.
Bandcamp or
yeah, exactly.
Maybe SoundCloud.
Yeah, Bandcamp, which gives a bigger chunk to them. But I guess convenience is what took it. You know, Steve Jobs created that ecosystem. And
No.
Well,
the system was already there because of Napster and all sorts of like piracy going on in the first place.
But his ecosystem was based on convenience, whereas Napster, you have to know a little bit. He was the guy who created something where there is a talisman in your pocket, and then he took the entire thing into his own pocket.
I disagree. People went to that only because it was legal.
I don't know. No, people are lazy. No, I think they're more lazy than.
So what you're saying is if it was technically even easier to pirate it, they would do that instead.
Or if it was technically easier, like if people knew to go to Bandcamp or if that was the easiest interface or they were information, if the people are taught that, oh yeah, that's how you get money to the artists. But that's not really high up on the anybody's scale of information. Like, how do you get money to artists? Because there's a gajillion ways to get the music. The easiest way for most people is you click on iTunes or whatever your Google. Didn't Google Music just go out of business? Didn't they just take that one offline?
No, so. They would.
Who knows? They're always offering.
They transitioned into something new.
Got already this week. So iTunes still wins in that case, and SoundCloud for streaming or whatever. But if there was an easy way for artists to get product to people with one or zero buttons, and the money went to them, people might actually jump on that platform and deplatform, you know, the newest slave owner, SoundCloud. from the previous slave owner, all the music companies. So I don't know. People are
really a bunch of podcasts from SoundCloud until they started really screwing with their customers.
Meet the new boss, same as the old one.
Exactly.
But now, getting back to the original topic, which we've digressed from pretty far.
We have a topic.
Yeah, the RIAA takedown of YouTube DL. But YouTube DL had a bunch of other legitimate uses too. YouTube wasn't the only site that YouTube DL could download from. There were hundreds on the list. Now, granted, most of them were adult sites. There are also legitimate ones like Vimeo.
So it had legitimate uses for people to be able to download videos from other services and different things that allowed them to download.
Is there a transparent way to battle against a DMCA for a individual or a company? Or is it just some kind of weird closed star chamber?
It's a star chamber.
It seems to be like...
made by the private entities.
Oh, private consortium of SmackDown. The new Pinkertons, DMCA. I see.
And everybody has their own internal police. So that created a lot of wonderful backlash, and people actually exploited a well-known, and in fact it was marked as a won't fix bug in GitHub, to put the YouTube DL code directly into the Digital Millennium Copyright Act's GitHub repository. So they have their own repository, and they use a bug that Microsoft said they won't fix to put out all YouTube DL's code into the RIAA's repositories.
That's beautiful.
Hundreds of times over, and it's been mirrored all over the internet. This thing got Streisanded.
So wait. Microsoft is helping facilitate piracy right now.
They used to.
Let's just enjoy that moment for a second.
They used to.
Freedom.
So I thought that was beautiful. You know, just a beautiful thing that happened on the internet.
Well, at least something beautiful can happen on the internet.
Hi, Poloy.
Well, you guys are listening to WGXC Acre Hudson Catskill, 90.7 FM on the radio dial. WGXC.org on your URL slot or address bar or whatever you want to call it. I like slot.
Oh, yeah. Right. The least of slots in town. So... are we going to play a Weird Al song or any song in between, or we're just going to keep talking?
I have a Weird Al song queued up. It was the one that I saved for the After Hours show, which, by the way, if anybody's listening, we will probably run past the 8 o'clock hour, in which case other people are going to take over on WGXC, but we will be streaming through the WGXC website that I just mentioned. Just go there, WGXC.org, click on Listen, and you'll be able to listen to us keep on talking, and that's when our mouths get filthy.
The slots get looser.
The slots get even looser. All right, I am going to play the Weird Al song that I did not play during the actual show, but played in the After Hours show last time. Enjoy!
I lost my car keys. I had to steal my neighbor's Segway to get here today. And on the way, I crashed in this dumpster. And these kids are making a video, and now I'm on TikTok. I can't.
Excuse me. Yeah? Being not hysterical? Despite, you know, things? Oh, I can do that. Dignified.
Gentlemen, welcome to the first presidential debate. Our first question in the key of G sharp minor is
Scoo doo doo dit doo we didn't bibba da baba da boo baba doo dit.
I'm so sorry.
2020's a raging hellscape. Any ideas on how to stop a worldwide plague?
We should be providing people the help they need.
He knew back in February it was a deadly disease. What did he do? He's on tape acknowledging he knew.
Really?
He waited and waited and waited, and he didn't even tell you. President Trump did a phenomenal job. People said that.
Well,
we got the gowns, we made the ventilators, we got the masks. I don't wear masks like him. Every time you see him, he's got a mask. The biggest mask I've ever seen. The biggest mask I've ever seen.
Will we ever get back all the jobs we lost? Or should we set up 11 million Etsy shops?
My economic plan would create $1 trillion in economic growth. He has no intention of making it better for you all at home. I brought back football. It was me.
What?
Big Ten football, and I'm very happy.
Who's it gonna be?
They wanna take out the cows.
In the West Wing.
Now here's the deal. He has no idea what he's talking about.
We're living in the apocalypse. I'm begging you to put a stop to this pretty please.
He said he could inject some bleach. They cheat.
If the Supreme Court is truly supreme, where's the guac, ground beef, and sour cream?
The American people have a right to say, who's the Supreme Court nominee? Our biggest inducer are from Notre Dame. We have a phenomenal nominee.
I ran out of questions, but still got a while. It's time to drop some bars. Let's see how you freestyle.
In Europe, they live their forest cities. They're called forest cities. It's a forest city.
You know, he talks about the art of the deal. China's perfected the art of the steel.
Bad things happen in Philadelphia. Bad things.
He's just afraid.
Stand back and stand by.
But he said there were very fine people on both sides. He said maybe we should drop a nuclear weapon on hurricanes.
The cars have computers all over the place.
Who's it gonna be?
They want to take out the cows.
In the West Wing.
Now here's the deal, he has no idea what he's talking about.
We're living in the apocalypse, I'm begging you to put a stop to this pretty please.
Keep yapping, man, the people understand,
he doesn't have a plan.
Exploding trees, COVID-19, hurricanes with names past the letter Z. Conspiracy theories about vaccines, murder hornets coming from across the sea. Too many memes about World War III, can't tell what's hell or reality. Earthquakes ruining my whole week, cause I dropped my keys in the crack between the cup holder and my car seat. Who's it gonna be?
They wanna take out the cows.
In the West Wing.
Now here's the deal, he has no idea what he's talking about.
We're living in the apocalypse, I'm begging you to put a stop to this pretty please.
He said he could inject some bleach. They cheat.
Who's it gonna be?
That was really a productive segment. One.
Somebody asked me.
Okay, and we are back. Welcome to the Thingularity Radio program. We've just made our halfway point, and that was Weird Al, and everything is kosher and back to normal. Tom, what you got for me, bud?
Well, when Roger Penrose got the Nobel Prize in Physics, I knew who he was, and I've been listening to his lectures for about 6 months. On ideas that he has for the origin of the universe, and so there he was being honored for 50 years of innovations. In fact, they looked back almost that far to make the Nobel for a paper he wrote that's 2 pages long. He was involved with Stephen Hawking, and if Stephen Hawking had been alive, they would have shared it, I'm sure, for that particular innovation in thinking about black holes and how they evaporate. But
Hawking radiation.
Yeah, they eventually, after Google years, which is 10 to the 100th years, they disappear, and he began to do the math around that. When they disappear, there's no material left, no mass left, and then he said, well, if there's no mass, there'll be no clocks. There's no way to keep time, because the time that we understand really comes from the vibration of atoms. If there are no atoms, there's nothing but energy. And then he came to the conclusion that if there was nothing but energy, energy doesn't know where it is.
Are we talking about a state of total entropy?
A state of total entropy, and the energy doesn't know where it is. And then he ran some equations around that, and he realized that if the photons don't know where they are. They're all in the same place. And this is what he calls a conformal map. It's sort of like the globe. You know, if you go north of the North Pole, well, you can't go north of the North Pole. And the decay of mass results in all the energy getting concentrated in one place. Oddly enough, space becomes a point. And when that happens, you get a big bang. So this cyclical cosmology is based on a mathematical trick that he'd been working with all his life. He models infinity, you know, as much as imaginary numbers. They're just tools that he uses to explore mathematics, or in some cases the real world. So on that basis, he came up with a solution to the Big Bang, which includes the development of gravity, which has always been the problem. They have to have quantum gravity to explain how things develop. And that's a theory that doesn't exist. No one's ever really been able to come up with quantum gravity. But he had a theory, and from that theory, he made a prediction that if you look at the cosmic background radiation, you would see echoes from the collapse of the black holes from the time before our time. He calls them aeons. So the aeon preceding us would produce a ring in the cosmic background radiation, and he predicted what size it would be, and they went off and looked at that noisy pattern, and sure enough, there were these rings.
Which, so that indicates that there is an ability to detect reverberations from the previous iteration of the universe?
Right, it's the collapse of the black hole. It's the gravitational waves that are made when black holes collide. So at the point of the highest entropy for gravity, black holes have all congealed into these gargantuan black holes. Every time that happens, it produces the gravity waves that we're looking at now through the new telescopes that see the vibrations of space-time. So hey, this is what he came up with. He came up with a prediction, and the prediction had a bunch of math around it that predicts the development of dark matter. And he says, yes, he knows what dark matter is based on these equations. Dark matter is a one-dimensional mass that is, and he says it is about 10 micrograms per particle. I mean, absolutely huge by particle standards, but it also decays over the course of the universe to nothing, producing gravity waves as it decays. So this has got me really fascinated, because its decay time, half-life, is about 10 billion years, which means that the first wave of decay, noticeable decay of the one-dimensional and invisible, you can't see these dark matter particles, it's happening right now. And while you can't see the dark matter, you can see the result of the dark matter decay. So that's really interesting, because we see an acceleration in the universe, and that may be related as much to dark matter decay as it is to the so-called dark energy. So there are a lot of things that he brought to the table, and poof, he gets the Nobel Prize. Not for that, because it's really speculative, but for the sheer genius behind it. It's really fascinating. So he's 89 years old. He keeps going around and giving lectures with the overhead projection technique of transparent 8x10s that he draws himself.
That's the best technique.
I know, totally.
And it's fascinating to watch him go at it. He draws everything himself. He's not a great artist, but his ideas inspired M.C. Escher to do M.C. Escher's greatest etchings. One's called Waterfalls, and the other is called Stairways. And I think you've seen them, the infinite stairway, where you're going up and down in the same gravity space.
Get back to the dark matter.
Well,
that's really
his guy's brain is around us everywhere. Penrose tiles are another manifestation of his ideas. And the dark matter, for me, is something I can look at potentially with the telescope I'm developing for NASA.
Wait, one second.
Sorry.
You raised many questions.
Joe.
There are many questions. Like, do you believe in the theory of brains, that there are many brains?
Yeah.
B-R-A-N-E-S.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Penrose addresses string theory, multiverse, and all these other ideas, and he's very down home about it. He says, "Look, it's kind of clear that there are three dimensions."
But according to that, there's 11 dimensions.
String theory works math, and he says string theory is very interesting because
it's just math.
He understands the math in string theory, but he says it's not applicable to physics. It's just,
it's improvable. Yeah.
Whereas, you know, he wants to go with gravity and Einstein's equations because they work. And now that Hawking and he had come up with the concept that there's this center to a black hole that will gradually evaporate, he's arguing that what evaporates in the end, now we're talking a very long period of time, 10 to 100 years.
Beyond the lifetime of our universe, basically.
Right, is long enough so that everything evaporates into photons, and then he does this math trick. And so he dismisses...
And that math Penrose, somehow Penrose, entropy and concentrates those photons. Am I just clear on that?
The photons are concentrated by this peculiarity that they don't know where they are.
In other words, they can't measure their own position. Right. There's no position to them.
Right.
Well, positions all relative.
Yeah, you could call it relative. He calls it conformal. He says you can see infinity in an Escher where you have interlocked, scaled down fish and birds, or scaled down demons and angels. And out toward the edge of these circles, everything looks the same and they're microscopic. And he says, this is what's happening. There is a way to define infinity that he uses routinely in mathematics so that you can use it as a tool. And he says, when you apply it to the physics of Einstein's equations, you come up with the fact that there's nothing but energy, and the energy doesn't, I mean, I'm using colloquial language, but it comes down to the fact the energy doesn't know where it is. And it finds itself concentrated at a singularity. And that singularity can't sustain itself, so it has this effect of changing everything back into mass, which is what happens at this point, this infinitesimal point, the universe reemerges. And he's using the cosmic background radiation picture to get it. And it's an interesting string of Nobel Prizes. The picture of the cosmic background radiation that we originally got came from a NASA scientist who got a Nobel Prize. He's the only NASA scientist to get a Nobel Prize. So the thing is, I'm watching all these lectures and enjoying them enormously, and YouTube doesn't block them. Is that the sort of thing? YouTube has figured out my algorithm, and they know I want to watch them, so... He's been very active. He's 89 years old.
Now, what's his name again?
And even though he's that
Roger old, Penrose?
I'm Roger Penrose.
Even though he's that old, he is like a young person, you know, inventing stuff that is worth watching if you want to know where we came from and where we're going. It's great stuff. He's also got a sense of humor, that British accent.
I think I remember.
He tells stories. He has lots of stories, naturally.
So, like, it's, you know, the big crunch or the big freeze.
He deals with all these things. He describes why they're probably not accurate descriptions of what's really going on in a very tangible way. He keeps saying things like, well, we'll skip that and it doesn't matter and you don't need to know this and you don't need to do that. And he keeps putting on these 8x10 transparencies with his hand-drawn pictures that are conceptualizations that came out of the math, but you get a really intuitive sense of what he's driving at, and it's great. He talks about Schrodinger's cat in a very funny, down-home way, and after he kills off the cat, he says, that's too mean, I'll have Schrodinger's lumps. Mm. And then he takes these lumps and rederives these equations graphically to the point where he is describing the methods by which he came up with these ideas, which he calls understanding. He says, computation alone is not consciousness. It's something else. and he's got an interesting theory of what it means to be conscious. By the way, he doesn't want to kill Schrodinger's cat because he's quite convinced cats are quite conscious. It'd be a really bad thing to off a cat that way. Well, Schrodinger used poison. He uses a pistol.
Oh, I guess
anyway, I recommend it. Roger Penrose, spelled like you'd think, P-E-N-R-O-S-E. He's totally in now because of that Nobel Prize he got like 2 weeks ago. So
nice.
Oh, he got 2 weeks ago. Holy, cool.
Yeah, it's so totally cool.
So, dark matter is decaying particle, decaying what? Hawking radiation?
Dark matter is mass, and it had to be created in order to form the cosmic background radiation that we see, and it explains a lot of the filaments that we see now. If you look back, you know, if we're looking back 10 billion, well, this is 14 billion years, and you see the structures that came out of the dark matter. So we know that it was born at that time, but what he's pointing out is that now, 14 billion years later, it's starting to decay, and that's a hypothesis that conforms with what we see, because the universe is starting to accelerate in this expansion. So the gravity that was holding us together is falling apart. It's just starting to fall apart now.
And did you say that in this theory there's 10 micrograms per particle of this one-dimensional mass? Yeah.
So he describes calling up Peebles, who is the theorist who got the Nobel Prize 2 years ago, and Heidi Newberg, who's an astronomer at RPI I work with, said, why did Peebles get it? And not for, you know, he didn't do any specific thing. He's just a cosmologist that understands how everybody else has worked out their equations. And so he's absolutely brilliant. I think he's at Princeton. So Penrose called up Peebles and he said, I don't know if this is going to go over, but dark matter might be a particle that, you know, has a mass, enormous mass of 10 micrograms, about the size of a fly's eye.
So to figure this stuff out, what do we need? Something like bigger than LIGO?
Measuring it.
Yeah, Penrose wants to use LIGO to see the decay of dark matter, but unfortunately he's mistaken about that. You can't see it with that telescope because the decay, when it decays, it becomes gravity waves, which is fine. They're looking at gravity waves with LIGO. These gravity waves have a frequency at the Planck length.
Oh, no way. We're only detecting atom length right now.
I mean, yeah, it's just you can't.
There's no way. We would need an interferometer that's like two planets away.
So, but my idea is that Vera Rubin, who this the key discoverer of dark matter, points out that the galaxies are held together with this halo of dark matter, and he's saying it's decaying. So I'm going to say, oh, good. I can measure the decay by looking at the stars that are beginning to fly off of the galaxy.
Mm.
You know, because he's made essentially a prediction that the halo is going to start falling apart. So you can almost take her data and contemporary data and compare them, or you could do it just now and 30 years into the future, make the next measurement, or you may even be able to measure it right now. Because the telescope I'm designing, this is one thing that Heidi Newberg's excited about, is the telescope's so incredibly sensitive, you can see the acceleration of the stars as they're moving through the galaxy. Okay, don't get me started. No.
We'll save it for next time. We'll have that as your project to bring for next time, the acceleration of the stars.
Like Google years, I'll have it.
That's awesome. Well, we have about enough time to kick over to the Forgotten Geeks history.
What? Cool.
Okay. November 1st, 1932, Wernher von Braun was named head of the German liquid fuel rocket program.
Mikhail! No, Nainenzi!
Signing a contract with the Reichsar to conduct research that led to the development of rockets as military weapons. November 2nd, 1988, Cornell University grad student Robert T. Morris unleashed a computer worm. intended as an experimental, self-replicating, self-propagating program. It began replicating faster than he anticipated, clogging thousands of computers around the country.
Clogging up them tubes.
Was that the first bugs?
Yeah, he sent an anonymous message to programmers on how to kill it and prevent the infection, but thanks to the route being blocked, it was received till it was too late. November 4th, 1939, Packard Motor Co. exhibited the first air-conditioned automobile at the 40th Automobile Show in Chicago, Illinois. The huge evaporator left little room in the trunk and could only be shut off by stopping, raising the hood, and removing the compressor belt.
Okay.
November 5th on this
day. No wonder when women didn't drive for a long time. Okay.
Speaking of which, November 5th on this day, 15 years apart, Marie Curie hit two milestones. She enrolled at Sorbonne in 1891 and became their first female lecturer in 1906.
Look up that family. It is a good, awesome history. Those people are freaking heroes.
Mm-hmm. 1992. Evidence of 5,000-year-old beer was found at Göden Tepe in the Zagros Mountains of Iran.
And it goes back even farther than that.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah.
Organic residue inside a pottery vessel believed to have been used for beer fermentation or storage.
Beer is the great.
Like there was also some evidence of wine found a couple years later.
Yeah, alcoholic beverages go back almost 20,000 years.
They go natural fermentation. They were around as long as we were.
Well, things rotted. What are you going to do?
November 6, 2012, 4,000 residents in Athens, Clark County, Georgia, wrote in Charles Darwin as a protest vote against anti-science fundamentalist Paul Braun. November 9, 1957, Gordon Gould began writing the principles of light amplification by stimulated emission of radiation or laser during a sleepless night. November 10, 1983, Fred Kogan presented the first documented computer virus at a security seminar.
Mm.
He added it to a graphics program for a Vax mini computer.
Not anti-vax.
November 12, 1974. For the first time since 1833, a salmon was discovered in the River Thames in England. Victorian era sewage and waste had caused the once thriving fish to disappear.
Oh, don't get me started on the Thames.
Yeah.
Circa 19 or 18.
Yeah,
54.
Yeah, Victorian and
they didn't. Oh my god, never mind.
Anybody that thinks that time traveling into the past is a good idea will note that story as good reason not to. You're gonna just start throwing off.
Well, it took Parliament being made to stay in their own brand new building to say maybe we should get some sewage.
Yeah,
here in
maybe
London,
we should drink our own poop.
Now, well, before that, it was all horrible sewage, but yeah, it was because of the big fires in London that they had to build a new parliament, and Parliament was made to stay in that building and smell the sewage before they made an actual sewer system.
Yeah. No, yeah, I wouldn't travel back in time any further than the 70s.
Everybody smoked. All the
time. Around.
Maybe the 6th. Anyways, November 13th, 1971, Mariner 9 entered Martian orbit, becoming the first man-made object to orbit another planet.
Oh, that made me forget about one of the stories I wanted to talk about, or just made me remember. Keep going.
Okay. November 14th, 1922, BBC officially opened and commenced daily radio service, starting with 6 p.m. news. November 15th, a U.S. patent was issued to King Camp Gillette for the invention of a safety razor using disposable blades.
Yep.
1970, November 17th, Doug Engelbert was issued the patent for an XY position indicator for a display system, nicknamed a computer mouse after his tail-like cable. It was a hollow wooden box with a single push button. November 18th, 1963, the first push-button telephone in the U.S. entered commercial service in Pennsylvania.
The world of tomorrow!
I think there's an MST short that...
But there absolutely is. And we have the Space Needle in Seattle to remember it all by.
Mm-hmm. November 21st, 1953, the British Museum announced the Piltdown Man fossil was an expert fraud constructed from 37 pieces of altered bone and stone, including a thickened by disease human cranium and half an orangutan jaw with the teeth filed down.
Wait, wasn't that just like a publicity stunt for a mall? Oh, wait, that was the Simpsons.
Yeah, they lost the wings on the transport. November 24th, 1859, Charles Darwin's The Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection, detailing the evidence he had collected since his voyage on the Beagle, that species are the result of gradual biological evolution through natural selection, was published in England.
He would even experiment on his own children.
That's a scientist.
November 25th, 1948, Leroy Ed Parsons, an electronic salesman and radio station manager in Oregon, invented cable television. He had picked up a signal from station KRSC with a large antenna on the roof of a hotel and strung a coaxial cable across the street into his living room.
And thus began the downfall of society.
November 27th, 1826, pharmacist John Walker invented the first strike-anywhere friction match.
Nice, and they still exist.
Yeah.
I love them. They're so dangerous.
Yeah.
Useful.
Mm-hmm. November 28, 1967, the first pulsating radio source, or pulsar, which was believed to be a neutron star with a rapid spin, was detected by grad student Jocelyn Bell at the Mullard Radio Astronomy in Cambridge. And November 30, 1609, Galileo Galilei turned his telescope to the moon and noted the irregularities of the crescent face, began drawing his discoveries. And in 1858, John Landis Mason was granted a patent for his invention of what would become known as the Mason jar.
Nice.
And finally, 1899, the first commercial use of aluminum as an electrical transmission conductor was conducted by the Hartford Electrical Light Company in Hartford, Connecticut, to its water power plant in Tariffville, Connecticut.
Aluminum sucks.
What are you talking about? It's great.
It was a baby step.
I just wanted to get on two things because Corey just reminded me of two stories that I wanted to squeeze in really quick. One, Voyager 2. Nobody has been talking to Voyager 2 for about 5 months or so, and that is because it is going south. There is a north and south to the solar system, and it is heading southward. And unfortunately, we have three major communication centers on our planet for talking to the Deep Space Network. The only one that's actually able to point south and talk to it is in Australia, and it's been retrofitted for a few months. That one is back online now. It has spoken to Voyager 2. Voyager 2 has responded, and it is continuing to collect interstellar data for us. And you were talking about something that reminded me of the fast radio bursts.
Pulsars?
Pulsar?
Yes. We have detected the source of one form of fast radio burst, and that is a magnetar. So it is a naturally occurring phenomena, at least some of them.
Magnetar?
Magnetar.
That's like some kind of supervillain, I think.
It's like a Pokemon. Can I catch that with a Master Ball?
And now, you know, Voyager 2 hasn't quite left our solar system, but Voyager 1 has.
I think 2 is left and 1 is almost.
I think 1 has left. One was the first one to leave our solar system, right?
I think 2 is the first one to leave. I think they're
backwards.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, the second one left first, I believe.
Okay.
Yep. It's reporting back about the interstellar medium.
Voyager 2 has breached the heliopause. On November 5th, 2018, Voyager 2 became the only second spacecraft in history to leave the heliosphere. Oh!
Oh, wait, Voyager 1 already left? What?
I guess we're going to have to research it. We're starting to run out of time.
Well, it's 7:58.
Like its twin, Voyager 1, Voyager 2 appears to be in a perturbed transitional region just beyond the heliosphere. So they are both transitioning to the interstellar space.
Okay.
In different directions. That one I do know. Now, with only a minute left, does anybody have anything they want to say before we start today?
Want to wrap it up, I guess? I don't know.
Arch Linux is really good, and you're wrong.
Go with Debian, it is very stable, or you can go with Kubuntu. Don't touch GNOME, it's dirty. It is so dirty.
Okay, all right, see what happens.
So,
see what happens.
Everybody, All right, you've been listening to the Catskill Makers Syndicate and the Thingularity Radio Program. Assuming that the world is still held together next month, we will see you then. Have a great night, everybody.
Listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra.
Hey, they ended.